controversy on Organization Day, why the marriage amendment dominated, how lawmakers view the education battle, the governor's approval rating, and a high honor for Dick Lugar. That plus a mass transit recommendation, a new award for teachers, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, Indiana lawmakers met for Organization Day. Let's just say it was different.
It's a day set aside for ceremony like the swearing-in of a new lawmaker.
I do solemnly swear.
I do solemnly swear.
And charity as the House Speaker led a drive to support Special Olympics.
I joined Special Olympics and gained valuable self-confidence.
But this time the hallways were home to a crowd of mid-session size. Many of them passing out letters in opposition to a proposed permanent ban on same-sex marriage.
It has to stop, and it has to stop today.
As Democratic leaders called on majority Republicans to drop the gay marriage debate.
And take it off the table immediately so we can focus on the real issues that are facing Indiana.
It's not on the House Speaker's priority list, but it's also a topic he won't avoid.
It's going to be treated like any other bill. I don't think it should be killed by one person, whether that is the university president or, for that matter, the Speaker of the House.
Will the marriage amendment overshadow the 2014 General Assembly? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, did Democrats violate protocol by making demands on Organization Day?
Oh, I don't think so. I think what would you expect them to do? I mean, their numbers are so small in both houses that they're trying to get attention any way they can, and I don't think anybody saw it as a breach of protocol in any way, shape, or form. But this issue is going to dominate this session. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. As they will try it for it not to dominate the session, it's going to, both the calendar. I think they're going to try to deal with it early so they can get it out of the way and then deal with other issues.
Well, the Speaker said that he wasn't going to fast track it.
Well, I don't know. I hope that's wrong, actually. I hope they do fast track it, because I think if they let this thing languish, it is going to suck a lot of oxygen out of the room that would normally go to other issues that they also need to deal with. But it's going to dominate the session.
All right. Ann Delaney, you have said previously on this program that you expect Brian Bosma to amend this and attempt to send it to the ballot without the second sentence, which would outlaw civil unions. He's done the research. He shared this week that there are two precedents in the 70s and the 60s where that happened.
Amazing, huh? And I bet they weren't as substantive a change as this is, however.
And in neither case did anybody challenge it.
Well, it'll get challenged. It'll get challenged. It's a given. And that's exactly, of course, what he would want to have happen, to have a challenge, to keep it off the ballot for November. But you know what? If he doesn't want this to dominate...
You think his strategy is going to be to run this into a dead end?
Yes. I do actually think his strategy is to run it into a dead end. And I think he's afraid to kill it outright, which he obviously could do and should do. And if he's interested in talking about the issues that really are important to the future of this state, like education and preschool and kindergarten and jobs and minimum wage and things like that, he'd do it. But he's not. I don't think he has quite as much backbone to do that. So instead, he's going to kind of surreptitiously run it into a wall.
You ever seen a circumstance like this where lawmakers are trying to spell out priorities and an issue that's not on the priority list gets all the discussion?
It happens from time to time. It's hard to remember any like that, and it's also hard to remember over something that is as a resolution to put a question on the ballot, because those things are usually pretty rote. And it will dominate unless they do something early. But if they do run it into the wall, which I think is a very likely strategy, then it will take the entire session to do that.
And the next.
And so I think that it will dominate if that's the case, and there won't be much oxygen left for anything else, unfortunately.
I'm not sure what the speaker's agenda is, but I know that Senate President Pro Tem David Long said that he feels strongly that it can't go on the ballot if it's amended. He said he has looked at what I assume is the same research from LSA, and though there are precedents, he thinks that the experts say that it can't happen that way, and he doesn't expect it to.
Okay, so if you take David Long's viewpoint, that would mean that if you do change it, then you have to start the process over. It's about a 5-year process. Do you expect anyone wants to start this over again?
No, but, there are all kinds of ways to look at this politically. I mean, first of all, it'll be interesting to see if there's the will to make that change, to eliminate that second line, because that's going to require a lot of people to change a vote on this. There are going to be votes switched on this from when they voted last time, but this is a major change, and if they do that, it's going to be fascinating to see whether or not they have that will to do that or not. But then, you know, the other side of it is, if you do that and it doesn't go on it won't go on for another 5 years, because then public opinion really has
right.
time to change on this, and then maybe it drops altogether. I mean, you know, that's, you know, those are all things that have to be considered when this.
You see a trend here?
Well, I don't think there's any question that there's a trend, a public trend here. I don't think there's any question about that.
There is no question about it, and that's why you don't enshrine discrimination in the Constitution, which is exactly what they're trying to do here. The idea that you would do this is reprehensible. And, you know, somebody ought to have the courage to stand up and say no. And, you know, the Speaker and the President Pro Tem could both do that.
You know, I think that's a very good point, because you are talking about the Constitution and rights. It's a rights issue. But I also, the cynic in me wants to think, or thinks, that this is an issue where if it does go on for another, it gets stopped this year and goes forward, then the people who are behind the amendment then have that issue to continue to work with going forward. And that wouldn't be,
what
in their minds,
cynical
that
idea,
I know it's
John.
Cynical, Ann.
Do you think that there's some groups that might raise money off
yes.
this just to
yes.
pay themselves salaries and things like that?
Maybe they already have. Possible.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
All right. Organization Day also provided a preview of other controversies. The hallways were filled with people pushing for an expansion of Medicaid in Indiana, along with those opposed to a permanent ban on gay marriage. Meantime, legislative leaders talked about stepping into the power struggle between GOP Governor Mike Pence and Democratic State School Superintendent Glenda Ritz.
It may be appropriate to look at that structure and modernize it, not this session in the midst of an argument about who's in charge.
They've hired a bunch of people that they're paying very big salaries to, simply so they can sidestep somebody that the people elected. And I don't think that's conservative at all.
And Delaney, should the legislature stay out of this?
Well, I'm really very pleased to hear Brian Bosma say that they're going to stay out of it and leave the power that the people gave her alone, which is great. Now, if the governor would just do the same thing, we'd all be able to go forward with a coherent education strategy that has somebody in charge and has us all pulling in the right direction to do it. I think what's long overdue is an evaluation of whether all of these changes have made a difference. I mean, we keep changing everything, and nobody stands back and says, okay, so how have we done under these measures? And what else do we need to do, like, for example, preschool and mandatory kindergarten?
I have trouble believing that the legislature won't have some kind of discussion.
Well, that's because you're a cynic.
Now who's cynical?
Yeah. Well, the two of you.
I've been down there for a little while.
I've been there a little while too, and I agree. I don't see how, based on the controversy that's going on, that somebody's not going to file some legislation. And they have a right to do that. I mean, that's just natural. Now, whether or not it gets a hearing, whether or not it gets a vote, you know all the steps that go with
sure.
that. But sure, somebody's going to file something. But what the Speaker of the House said also in that very conversation was that he's clear that the Constitution says that education policy is the purview of the legislature. And that's pretty clear in the Constitution. And so, you know, and remember, you know, we got people, almost everybody sitting around this very panel, I don't know where Leslie was in this, but have said at one time or another that this ought to be an appointed position. And so, you know, there's going to be some sentiment there to bring that back. Now, Bosma did say, we're not going to do that this session, in a short session. I don't see how you do that now.
Yeah.
But I look for it to happen that legislation be offered in a long session next year.
Well, and if you're a Republican and you propose making this appointed position, it wouldn't affect Glenda Ritz's first term. You can say that this has nothing to do with her.
Yeah, you can say that. Yep. You can say they were going to do what they did if Tony Bennett was still
true.
The superintendent. Yeah. Nobody's going to believe
the debate,
you.
Well, I think the debate this year is not really going to be about whether to make it an appointed position. I think someone will introduce a bill. The real debate is going to be about whether to enshrine this new Center for Education and Career. I never get the name right. So
Center for Education and Career Innovation.
Whether to enshrine that in state law. It's going to be about what kind of powers that agency has versus the Department of Education. I think you can expect to see legislation to shift more authority over to that group, or at least for that group to share authority with the Department of Education. Those are where the battles are going to be. And I'm not sure that it even matters whether we're talking about an appointed or elected superintendent at that point. It's talking about whether or not the superintendent we have has real authority.
Now, since we were here last, the governor had proposed having a mediator come in and try to smooth things out between Glenda Ritz and the State Board of Education. She has come back and says that this isn't about her and the board, it's about her and the governor, and he needs to sit down with her. You expect that will happen sometime soon?
Well, I think it was Mary Beth Schneider who said that they ought to all get together and have a drink. And, you know, that's probably not a bad idea, honestly. If we would just stop these lobbing these charges over the wall or trying to, because I agree, Leslie, I think that the real issue is, will they take power away directly or a little bit at a time until the end of this thing? So I think they should talk about this in an adult fashion and get it over with.
I don't think they're going to, though. I think part of what we're seeing here is this idea of, you know, here's the governor, and is Glenda Ritz down here somewhere or is she up here? And the way the governor engages her, whether it's directly or through an agency or through a mediator, has a lot to say about where she is. If he starts meeting directly with her, then he's putting her up on the same
list. He wants a meeting with Kathleen Sebelius. What's the difference?
Yes. You know? Well, I mean, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Yeah. I'm just saying that I think that's part of what's happening.
He thinks that's perfectly okay, but he doesn't want
to
meet with her.
I'll tell you what.
He, by the way, got more. Well, he should meet with her. Because he's gotten good, and I hope he doesn't. Because she got more votes than he did. And, you know, there is a certain element here. Okay? He's perfectly willing to meet with Tony Bennett. Okay? And he better be careful that it isn't because she's female.
Just for the record, the governor met with her shortly after they both took office.
Right.
And I thought it was interesting. That meeting took place in her office.
Yes.
Right. And the next day he announced his new creation without sharing that information with her.
And I predict right now that they will have a conversation about this because he does not want this to continue to fester. He thinks education is too important to have this happen.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should the legislature insert itself in the education power struggle, A, to limit powers of the superintendent, B, to expand powers of the superintendent, C, to make the superintendent an appointed position, or D, not at all? Last week's question was, do you think Glenda Ritz is doing a good job? 95% said yes, 5% said no, less than a percentage point said, who is Glenda Ritz? If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. 3,000 took part in the poll. Vast majority of them were the Indiana State Teachers Association. I know they were just
guessing because you're a
senator. No, I got the email where they were requesting people to help out. The exclusive Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey measured approval ratings in the State House.
And this night mostly belongs to you.
Let's start with the governor. Mike Pence was elected with less than 50% of the vote in a three-way race. A year after the election, his approval rating shows improvement at 55%, according to the Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey. Just 27% disapprove of the job he's doing, with 18% still undecided. We shared the findings with the governor, who insists that he is more concerned with how constituents are doing than how he is.
I'll stay focused on the people of Indiana and our kids, and I'll be grateful for the support that we receive.
Mike Pence follows in the footsteps of fellow Republican Mitch Daniels, who had a slightly lower approval rating 2 years ago. But we asked people to look back on his 8 years of service and rate that performance. 70% rated good, very good, or excellent. Just 25% rated in the poor or very poor categories. Yet Daniels still sparks partisan passions.
59% of Republicans looking back say he did an excellent or very good job. Only about 25% of Democrats say that.
So what about the General Assembly, where there are GOP supermajorities in both houses?
I think we've got the best state legislature in America.
Sure, the governor likes lawmakers, but he has to work with them. The Hoosier survey found, however, that others, 53% in fact, also give positive reviews. 35% disapprove.
John Katzenberger, are any of those numbers surprising?
I wouldn't say they're surprising, but I'm a little bit astonished, I guess, surprised, whatever. Maybe it is a little surprising that Governor Daniels' numbers were so high in retrospect on the approval. And 55% is very high for Governor Pence. So
it's lower than a Republican purchased survey that was, they had him at 60 earlier in the year, but this same poll 2 years ago had Daniels at 53.
Right, and so getting out of the gate, he's kept his capital intact apparently, and the legislature, it's a case of Your legislature is better. It's easy to bash Congress. I think the fact that 53% like what the job the General Assembly's done is not really surprising.
That was the most surprising number to me. Just because I think a lot of people don't differentiate between legislative bodies. So I was a little surprised with all the controversy about Congress and as low as Congress's numbers are at that. It was above 50%. Yeah. So I was actually a little surprised by that.
Because Congress is in single digits. Right? You weren't surprised by any of these numbers?
No, not really. I thought that the Pence number was very strong. The governor's off to a great start, and people think he's doing a good job. So that number didn't surprise me. The Daniels number absolutely didn't surprise me. I mean, the only thing that surprised me about your report there was that Dr. Lasko thought that 25% of the Democrats that thought it was an excellent job was a low number. That's a big number. And 70% is great for people understanding the wonderful job that Mitch Daniels did leading the state. And the legislative number, I think people appreciate the fact that, we're sound financially in the state and that we're making progress, doing things that need to be done. And I think that's very reflective of the numbers.
We're making progress.
53%.
Higher than unemployment rate. No. We've got lower income. Yeah. We have more people on the
state. But when you have a majority in either house. Mike Pence got elected with 49%
of
the vote.
Well, and I'm not really surprised at the 55 because he hasn't done anything. He hasn't done anything to irritate people yet. But, the fact that Mitch Daniels' numbers are good is, again, not surprising because he's out. Evan Bayh's numbers were there after he was out of office as well.
And he didn't do anything.
All right, moving on. Yeah. Former Indiana Senator Richard Lugar received the highest civilian honor in the nation this week. Lugar and more than a dozen other prominent Americans, from former President Bill Clinton to Oprah, Loretta Lynn, and others, leaders in sports, science, and public service, were awarded the Medal of Freedom. The president joked about dangers he faced working alongside Lugar in Congress.
Now, I should say, traveling with Dick, you get close to unexploded landmines, mortar shells, test tubes filled with anthrax and the plague. His legacy, though, is the thousands of missiles and bombers and submarines and warheads that no longer threaten us. because of his extraordinary work. And our nation and our world are safer because of this statesman.
Leslie Weidenbender, did Dick Lugar turn out to be the president's favorite senator after all?
I guess in some ways maybe so. But, I mean, Dick Lugar certainly deserves the praise that he's gotten for the hard work that he's done all those years in trying to make the world safer. Whatever you think about his politics on many other things, I think he will certainly be remembered for all of that work.
If he had gotten this award last year, would it have made a difference in his reelection bid?
No, probably would have cost him a lot more votes than he ended up losing by, unfortunately, because I agree. I think a statesmanlike approach is sorely lacking in Congress, and it's unfortunate that he's not there to be a part of it anymore.
President Obama was asked about Lugar during the campaign, and he wasn't near that effusive.
Well, I'm sure was sensitive to the fact that Dick Lugar was running for re-election, and he was running against a great Democrat. So he obviously wanted to stay out of that. But this is a richly deserved award. I'm glad he was able to give it. I just hope that before President Obama leaves, he gives one to the other statesman in Indiana, and that is Lee Hamilton, absolutely, and also Birch Bayh, who has more words in the Constitution than any person in history except James Madison. Hmm.
What do you think about Dick Lugar getting this award?
I think it's unbelievably well-deserved. I mean, I think that the trip that then-Senator Obama took with Dick Lugar when they went on to Russia on one of these trips had a profound effect on Obama, and I think that made a big difference in his attitude about the relationship with the Russians. And, you know, it's another example of how Dick Lugar's leadership has, you know, passed off on other people and made a difference in the world.
A better mass transit system in central Indiana is one step closer to reality. This week, a study committee voted 12-1 to recommend a plan to the General Assembly that calls for new taxes to support more bus service. It's a scaled-back version of the plan rejected earlier this year. It calls for non-binding referendums in 5 counties.
And we view expanding access to jobs through greatly improved regional transit as a moral imperative.
But it's a positive step in the right direction toward a final resolution, meaning dedicated funding to support a better mass transit system.
Ron Gifford of Indy Connect there, preceded by Reverend Al Gerda Miller, who testified in favor of this plan. Mike McDaniel, is that really progress?
Yes. And one of the definitions of politics that always stuck with me through the years was that politics is the art of the possible. And you've got to keep the issue moving, got to keep it alive, and they've done that with this compromise. Pat Miller's done a nice job of getting people to agree to something related to this after all the years of discussing this. Now, is it what everybody wanted originally? No. Is it what we want eventually? No. But if they can get this through the legislature after a 12-1 vote out of that summer study commission, then you're off to a start. Then you've got something to build on. What's important here is if you can get some kind of regional governance structure in place where people have the ability to make decisions that affect the region, then you've started on something that may eventually be where you want to end up.
That's another animal. It's a skeleton plan. It doesn't spell out very much.
That's one view, and I understand Mike's spin on that. On the other hand, you could argue that this was a roadmap to roadblocks, because all they had to do was to amend the economic development income tax to allow each one of these counties to pass the tax to support this instead of setting up 6 different referendi on top of those votes.
You couldn't get that passed. That's why I said this is a good step in the right.
Well, it's progress. It's progress, but it's a long ways from the goal.
Oh, a long, long way.
It is a long way. It'll be a long way before they get this done, and I'll be surprised if they get it done in this next session, honestly.
I didn't think they'd get as far as they did. So I was surprised that they passed what they did. I actually thought a lot of the senators came out with a much more positive attitude about the problem that advocates say that the region is facing and the solution that they're looking at. And obviously rail has sort of gone by the wayside, but I think the rest of it actually is looking in better shape than it did just a few months ago.
That'd be good if that happens.
I do think the legislature will pass this. Now, whether it goes beyond that, that's what I'm a little less confident about.
And do you do a referendum in the same year that you do a same-sex marriage referendum, potentially?
So. A lot of questions.
An IPS graduate and Indiana Pacer is helping kick off a new program to reward Indianapolis public school teachers. George Hill will be the face and voice of the Hubbard Prize for Life for life-changing teachers. It's sponsored by the Hubbard Family Foundation, established by Al and Kathy Hubbard. Four full-time IPS teachers a year will each get $25,000 as a reward for making a real difference in a student's life. And Delaney, will that help create better teachers?
Well, I think it certainly will reward better teachers. I thought his story was very impressive, and I think that Kathy and Al Hubbard deserve a lot of credit for this. They're also investing a lot of money in trying to stop building discrimination into the Constitution as well, so they're being good citizens. And I think to the extent that his story can be highlighted about the difference one teacher can make in the future of a student, I think that's inspiring.
Yeah, Al Hubbard, former panelist on this show, former White House advisor,
Former state chair.
Plays a significant role in this community.
This is a great program, and it's wonderful that they're putting their money behind it. Those good teachers should be rewarded.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.